Wait, okay, so we're sticking in Perek Beis, but I wanted to skip now. We did something in the first Mishnah, and I wanted to skip now to what Mishnah I give you was Perek Mishnah Dalet, right? Mishnah Dalet, yeah. Okay, and the specific issue that I want to discuss comes up in the second half of the Mishnah. You don't have the text of the actual Mishnah in front of you, but the Mishnah here says, again, first, all of Perek Avos is famous, but the first Perek has a lot of very famous statements. One of them, as we see here, Al ta'dun chavercha acha tegil mekomo, don't judge a person until you walk in his shoes. That is here. And all sorts of other very interesting, Al tifrash b'nat tzibur, you should be a team player, don't separate yourself from the community, in the name of Hillel. And then, at the end of the Mishnah, we have the following. Al tomar l'kishe efna eshne, shema lo tipaneh. And this is said to all of us, the working man. Don't say, I know I'm supposed to learn, but you know, what can I do right now? I'm so busy. I have a career. I have things to do. When I'll retire, when I'll have time, you know, don't worry. I'm not just going to sit on the beach or play golf. That's when I'm going to learn. What's wrong with that? So the way the Mishnah describes it, there's a very practical problem. Shema lo tipaneh. How do you know what the future will bring? You know, again, not even connected to this Mishnah, but just I remember something that was so heartbreaking. And probably a lot of people know stories like this. It seems like there's more stories like this than you'd want. But I remember when I was a kid, there was a wonderful kosher bakery in my neighborhood. And as I'm sure you know, to be a baker, and theoretically you can make a nice living, I guess, but it's a hard life, right? You know, when the people come, you know, early in the morning for the rolls and for the danishes, it's got to be fresh. So you got to be up at 3 a.m, or whatever it is, to bake the stuff, right? It's a very long and hard career. And this person had been done it, you know, some success and for many years, and people loved him. And he was finally ready to retire. And he sold the company, you know, he sold his bakery. And I think it was shortly thereafter, he dropped dead. And I'm sure he had big plans. I don't know what his plans were, but I'm sure he had plans. He was finally ready to retire. And there's other examples like that. I remember that, you know, I was young, but I was old enough to, like, my father was much younger. This is years and years ago, decades ago. But even then, my father was like affected by like that. Wow. You never know. You just never know. So that's what the Mishnah says here. Don't put off something as important as learning. I mean, you could add, don't put off spending time with your children. Don't put off time doing lots of things. You know, you never know what the future is going to bring. That's the Mishnah. Okay. Now let's take a look at what Rav Asher Weiss says. And he quotes the Kutzke Rebbe. He says, the Rebbe of Kutzk has a play on words to teach us something totally different. He's going to turn it inside. I think that's what I sent you, right?
Yeah. Give it a tank.
No, why? No, that's like a nickname.
Oh,
like, as if he's like a host, like an angel or something. Okay. Yeah, no, that's just a nickname. So the Kutzker, he says, he has a completely different idea. He turns it inside out. But it's a powerful idea. So the simple idea is an important one. I wanted to make sure we knew what the simple message of the Mishnah was. But the Kutzker has a very original interpretation. And that is, Shema lo tipaneh. What does that mean? Again, so literally that means, maybe you'll never have free time. But says the Kutzker in a play on words, Shema kadosh baruch hu chafetz dafka betorah shel lo tipaneh. Maybe Hashem really values and really appreciates the type of Torah that's learned when you have no time.
No.
Not maybe you'll have no time, but maybe what Hashem really appreciates is not when you're learning when it's easy, but when you're learning, even if it's maybe less, when you're learning when it's dafka, when it's hard. And that's the quote. So now Rav Asher Weiss elaborates. Sharei, darkam v'tivam shel habriot, kasher kasher lehem la'asok b'torah machmas tirdos, achayim k'she hayom. It's human nature that when we don't have time to learn or do other similarly valuable things, because we're busy with the vagaries of life and job and family and b'chulei, l'chapes amatlot. We come up with excuses. L'itlaot b'terutzim shonim l'hashkit et matzpunam al b'dotar. We have a guilty conscience. We have a guilty conscience. We come up with all these excuses to hang answers that we can hang our guilt on, so to quiet our conscience. V'halo, but as the saying goes, Shmaita Bait Silta Kiyoma Dastana. That is to say, Shalvo et Atzmam Be'amaram L'Kishefna Eshna. That is to say, person will say, you know, when I have time, that's when I want to learn, and when I can, I'll do it. But it's all excuses. It's all excuses, he says. Be'emet yesh chashivut miyuchedet v'skula mufla'a davka. B'torah shalomed adam mitoch tsar v'koshi. Adarava. The thing that Hashem will appreciate the most valuable type of Torah, is not when you have nothing to do, so you learn, that's something. But adarava, when you have no time, and you still find the time, and you're under pressure, and you still make the time, that's even more valuable. And the anthem that he's going to use to keep on repeating this comes from a medrash in Yalkut Shimoni in Koheles, where it says here, Ach chachmasi umdali, which again literally means even my chachma even stood the test of time, stayed with me. But in a play on words, Amar Chanina bar Papa, Torah shalamadati ba'af mitkaimali. The Torah that I learned when I was under pressure, that's the one that really stayed. Now, this, again, it can mean both things, but I think it is definitely highlighting something else. It's also true, which is not only, as I said previously, it's more appreciated by Hashem, but also it has more of an impact on you. Right? That when you know that you really, it was so hard for you, and you still sacrificed, you still pushed, that's going to be mitkayemus. That's, you know, the thing that you did casually, leisurely, you might forget. But the thing that you really had the schwitz for, that's something that's really going to stay with you. Amar HaSaba Mikelm, the great Musar master, the student of Yisrael Salanter, Kasher Adam Lomei Torah Mitoch Koshi V'Yisurim, Yeshul Siyata Deshmaya V'Atzlacham Yuchadet. When you are willing to do it, again, none of us want real Yisurim, real struggles and real pain, but it can be even the pain of just, I have a huge job and a deadline and my wife wants me and my kids want me and my this and my that, whatever, or God forbid could be. Some even when they were, you know, sometimes you hear stories. Even this person was in chemotherapy, was in this, and they still want to learn in the hospital. And even when they were, in senile, but they wanted a chavrus, whatever. Those are extreme examples, clearly included. But hopefully, even the less extreme examples. And the point is, when you're challenged, when things are hard, and you still go out of your way to learn, then I think it has a double bracha. It's going to be more impactful on you, also be more appreciated from Hashem. Tells a famous story here in the next paragraph that they say in the name of Rab Chaim of Brisk, the famous Rab Chaim Soloveitchik, Sh'avar b'iyun al shnei hasvarim shagas aryeh v'turei evin. Right? Those are both written by the same author. Right? We know that in Judaism we have that funny tradition, which we take for granted, but I think the rest of the world would think we're crazy when they hear it. We call rabbis by the name of their books. So we talk about the Turei Evin. Or the Shagas Aryeh. The Turi Evin was a commentary on Gemara, on three Masechtos. Shagas Aryeh is more general essays or chulos and halacha. But, you know, both very deep, very, very deep, very intense, very high level, very well regarded svarim. So Reb Chaim, who lived afterwards, was younger than him, another generation. It is said that he went through those two svarim with great depth. The Hizbir, Shagas Aryeh, cause of Betziruso, I skipped the line. He said, even though the same author wrote them both, one of the books, Shagas Aryeh, is much more impressive than the other one. It's a more impressive intellectual accomplishment. The work is on a higher level. Now, how can you think it's the same person? Why should he have a higher level than one over the other? So Reb Chaim explained that the Shagas Aryeh, the one that he says on the higher level, he wrote when he was young. He had no money. I think he had a position, he had a shtela, but he was in a very small community, small shul. They had no money, they were poor, had only a few shekel to give the rabbi. He was poor as can be. He had every excuse not to be learning. He had a very heavy weight on his shoulders. And yet, he still learned and wrote that sefer, and because it came from that period of his life, Tsar Dochak, he was able to accomplish something incredible, said Reb Chaim. However, Haturi Evin, that he wrote, Achash Kihain Karav Bekilas Metz, a great, one of the great European communities, right? Ashkenazi community, the Kila Metz, has a big rabbonus, so he was very busy, but more to the point was, now he had a respectable salary. So you would think, again, logically you might think, Adarabba, because he had a more comfortable salary, he lived comfortably, and he could learn benachas. The answer is yes, he probably could learn benachas. And said Reb Chaim, but you can tell there's a subtle difference. It's not as sharp. Because when he was able to do what he did, even with great challenges, so you could explain this on a prosaic level. He had to put in more effort, so therefore, iron sharpens iron, so to speak. And I think what he's also trying to convey is, even on a mystical, metaphysical level, Hashem was so impressed with what he was doing, Hashem blessed those efforts even more than the latter. Okay? He says, next paragraph. Right, his Rebbe, Rav Asher Weiss, always was a very, very close student of the Kloisenberger Rebbe. The Kloisenberger Rebbe was very, very famous. This is Rebbe, a Rav before the war, had, I think, 11 kids, if I remember correctly. Nebuch, who all died in the Holocaust. Wife and 11 kids. And he got remarried and had at least one, if not more, I'm not sure how many children he had after the Holocaust. But he rebuilt his family, he rebuilt his chassidus, you know, into an empire, etc. And that was Rav Asher Weiss's Rebbe and his Rav. So he says, I remember, he says, myself, hearing from him, Shamal b'Torah mitoch yisurim koshim v'sevarav. The Rebbe would give over, I don't know if he gave it over in public or only to his closest students, but he would tell about the incredible challenges and pain he had in his life. The pun of mafikim or v'noga mechedvasa d'shmaitza. And yet, because he was able to have a little bit of time and mental space for learning, his face was, he was aglow, he was on fire, his face radiated light. And dafka, in that period of his life, he had his greatest success in learning. His greatest chidushim happened in that most difficult and painful period. And that's this idea, again, from the Medrash, the Torah Shalamadati Ba'af. Okay, then he tells another story here, which is, I never, everything until now I actually did know. It's good to read it, it's good to review, but it wasn't new to me. But the next thing, which I never saw before, is from the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish, of course, was, you know, one of the greatest of his generation. Started off in Europe, in Vilna, then he came to Eretz Yisrael, was one of the founders of the city of Bnei Brak. And he has many, many svarim under the name Chazon Ish. Hence we call him the Chazon Ish. And he has, you know, everything he wrote was very hard. He was not an easy person to read. Everything was deep and hard. But some of the topics, at least, are somewhat accessible. But he also wrote on super esoteric topics, like Taharos and Seches Kalim. And apparently there, he has some kind of an introduction, going back to the early years of his life. This is before he made Aliyah. That this particular thing he wrote, Shnat Milchama, Austria. He says he's writing this at a time of World War. How crazy it was. How the Austrian Empire was at war with the Mamlechas Russia, with the Russian army, and Anglia, England, Tsarfat, France, the Kharbo, Eros, Benarasu, Medinos, and it was killing left and right, and cities and countries are being destroyed, where Jewish people were living, Rivos from Israel, Golu, Blim Mishanu, Mishanan. The Jewish people had to run and were in Golus, and they had no one to protect them, no one to take care of them. There was no Medina Israel, there was no Tzahaganali Israel. They were all vulnerable. It was terrible. Benari.
This is 1915.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, you did the math, thank you. Explaining about all different people who died and how difficult it was. Matu Bate Medrash, there was barely any learning. I mean, how could you learn? And who could support learning, etc.? He talks about the city, which I don't even know how to pronounce it, Stuvitzpi? Stuvipsi? I don't know what that is. Shnisrafa came out, the whole city burned down on, you know, Chafei Nisan, Sivan, excuse me, Chodesh Malacha. And it's during this horrible thing that he's describing, he's writing this Chidushim Antaros. Unbelievable. So says Rav Asher Weiss, last line. This unbelievable genius who, you know, produced the highest level of Torah learning in his generation, even he had to do it ba'af in these difficult circumstances. Heish amdalo, and that is what helped him accomplish such a great thing. Next page. Says Rav Asher, personal reflections, autobiographically. Yochel ani lahaid alatzmi. How many of my own personal chedushim I was zocher to come up with, to write down, nichtivu ayadai v'beis hacholim asher yashavti liyad mitas cholah sharai yasi alah shalom. Wow. L'marati b'af mitoch tzar v'ke'ev leiv. He said this whole sefer was something he did in memory of his wife. He says, but I'm telling you, his wife died of cancer. I'm not sure how long she was sick for, but it was a semi-extended period of time. In fact, he actually spent the last few months in treatment. She was in America. I think they were in Sloan Kettering, if I remember correctly. I think, if I remember correctly, I might be wrong on this, she may even have died in America, and then they brought her back. But anyway, he was by her bedside, you know, as much as he could be. I don't remember if it was over a month, or maybe it was over years. Like, I don't remember exactly how long he was sick for. But he writes here that even though he was by her bedside, you know, sometimes maybe she was sleeping, or she was whatever, even in the hospital, even though he was in pain and sad, but he was still learning, and he said he had great siyata d'shmai, great success in his learning then. I'm sure he did. I'm sure. Again, well, obviously, he had to give a shiur. He'd go give a shiur and went back to the hospital.
Yeah.
But anyway, now, this, as they write on the bottom here, this actually, this particular piece, I guess, was not only, or he might have shared this with his family on the Motzei Shabbos learning. But this particular piece, unlike a lot, the most of the Sefer, might also have been added, because it says here this piece was actually a whole speech, a shiur, a talk that he gave yeshiva students during Corona. So the last part of it is where he now turns to these young yeshiva boys who are having their lives turned upside down. You know, they're not in school. And my guess is probably whoever he was talking to didn't have Zoom. You know, they had every excuse available to them not to learn. So he says, Ya'al Kain, Yadu Naha Bachurim Habrechim Haniflim. He turns to the people he's speaking to at the time. Davka Batukuvazu. He says, right, Davka at this period, and he's referring to Corona. So you have every excuse not to learn. But if you will learn, this is going to be so beloved to Hashem, you're going to have great hatzlach in your learning if you learn, despite how challenging it is now. Now he ends the piece with the famous Gemara of Hillel HaZakein in Yuma, who says, the Gemara tells us as follows. Many of you know this, but it's always good reviewing. Very, very powerful story. Amro Allah al Hillel HaZakein. Shebachol yom, yom hayosa umistaker be tarpeik. He was incredibly poor, very, very poor, and he barely, you know, earned a meager, meek living. And what did he do with this barely amount of money he earned? Half of it he would give to his family, Leparnaso's Anshe Peso, half of the teeny bit of money, so he had a little, you know, bread and water. And the other half he gave to the Shomer of the Beis Medrash. Apparently in those days they didn't have tuition. But maybe you could say it was almost maybe better. If you didn't go to school, you didn't have to pay. But when you wanted to go to school, you had to pay. So there was a guard waiting at the front of the Beis Medrash. You had to pay whatever amount it was. Obviously, it wasn't a huge amount. But it was half of the meager amount that he made. But he gave up 50%. 50% of his meager earnings, says the Gemara, in order to be allowed to the Beis Medrash. Okay? Pamachas, lo motzal l'histaker. One day, he didn't make enough money. He didn't even have that amount of money. And therefore, the Shomer didn't let him in. Could you imagine? I'd feel pretty good.
Didn't let him in.
He didn't have any money. No rachmanis. There was no layaway plan. They didn't have a scholarship plan. Anyway, so what happened? You don't want to let me in. Fine, I'm not going to learn today. Not ill. Excuse me. His love of learning was insatiable. Allah. Right, the two great Tanoim who were the heads of the Beis Medrash, Shmai Vavtayo, and they were teaching. He went up to the sunlight. He went up to the roof, and he could hear and see into the Beis Medrash, and he could figure, they won't let me in, so I'll stay on the roof. What happened? Amru Osayom Erev Shabbos Haya. It was a Friday. Utkuvas Tevis Haya. It was in the winter. Yard of Shelag Min Hashemayim. And turns out that Friday, that Erev Shabbos, was a terrible snow. The Hillel resting on the roof. Kish'ala Amar HaShachar, the next morning, Shabbos morning, Allah Sheshivis, Shmaev Avtalion, come into the Beis Medrash. Amar L'Shmaev Avtalion. Avtalion Achi. B'chayim Abayis Meir, usually, the Beis Medrash is full of light in the morning. The sun comes in through the sunlight. Hayom Afel, but it's all dark. There's something blocking the sun from coming in. We gotta go on the roof. Let's check. Something's on the sun. On the sunlight. Shema Yom HaMur, it could be that it's such a cloudy day, there's no sun. So what happened? They looked up, and they could see, all of a sudden, they see a person who had basically been frozen. Couldn't move, on the sunlight, on the skylight. Alu, they went up, Umatsu, Alav, Rum, Shalosh, Amos, Shelag. A huge amount of snow piled up on Hillel. They were able to, you know, break through with the snow. They brought him down. They bathed him in hot water. They covered, they covered him with blankets, etc. They put him next to the fire, and all those things were, you can't do on Shabbos. But his life was in jeopardy. He could have frozen to death. So they revived him. Roi ze lechalel Allah was a Shabbos. Somebody who had such dedication for learning, he certainly could be mechalel Shabbos for him. Ad kan. So it says Avashar Weiss. I mean, the Gemara itself says, that Hillel was mechayev d'aniyim. Right, certain people say, "What's my excuse? I don't have time to learn. I'm too busy working. If I had more money and I was more comfortable, I'd have time to learn." Really, you were poorer than hell. Now, there's other people. I don't remember the Gemara by heart, so I don't want to start giving names. There's other people who have the opposite excuse. I have such a big business. I have so many responsibilities. I have such a big, I don't have time to learn. Really? Right. So there's other people who are so wealthy, and they still, Rebbe, right? Rebbe says, yeah, look, he was also very wealthy, and he's still, right? So there's all, some people say, well, I'm single, therefore I'm depressed, and I'm, you know, I don't have a good family life. Really? There's people, other people say, oh, if I was still single, I could learn, but I have a wife, I got kids, I don't have time to learn. The answer is, they're all good excuses, and they're all bad excuses. It's true that these things are hard. No one's doubted them. But yet, people really want it, figured it out anyway. Figured it out anyway. So Hillel Zakein, Lama Torvah, Yitoch Dochak Mitzar, despite how hard it was for Hillel, he still learned, V'hish Amda Lo Lahami Torvah Yisrael. This chus, this power of Hillel, is what ended up turning into the great Hillel, Hazakein. Lo Yoav, Lo Noel, Lidrosh, Al Tamar, Lishkish, Efna, Eshna, Shema, Latifna, as the Mishnah said, again, not just because you never know if you'll ever have the time, but Adarabba, the thing that you'll learn when you don't have the time is actually the most precious, valuable, and most significant learning that a person can do. So again, this is new to me. I'd never learned this piece until I was learning it earlier today. But this Gemara, this idea, I actually often think about when it comes to the religious soldiers. We talk about, I'm not discussing the machlokas that can come out of it, but we talk about, you know, how the people who are learning is given, you know, the Torah is a schus for the soldiers. Right? So one could agree with that and still respond, that's wonderful that the people who are in the Beis Medrash are learning. But if that's a schus, so how much greater would it be a schus if the soldiers themselves are learning? Yeah, based on just everything you've seen here, just on this piece. I don't know, maybe off the record, I would ask Rabbi Asher Weiss, I don't know if he would answer me. But based on this, I think I know what he would say, and I think he would say I'm right. A guy who's sitting in a Beis Medrash today and learned 10 hours. Or a guy who's in Rafa, who found, you know, 10 minutes to learn, 5 minutes to learn, 30 minutes to learn. Which one's more precious? Which is more beloved to Hashem? They are the modern incarnation of Hillel. Right? Mitoch Yisurin, I'm not saying there could be other people who are challenging too, not only the soldiers, but certainly a great, maybe the greatest example of that. And there are, I speak about this all the time because it has to do with my work with Salash. So I have this chus of giving the Torah to these guys, but I can make them learn. If they didn't want to learn, I wouldn't have to print all those books. I wouldn't have to raise all that money, but they do. Just the other night, was it Sunday? I think it was Sunday. A soldier texts me in Hebrew. He's going to be available. He can come into the neighborhood. He wants to pick up some Sfarim. He wanted to pick up Rav Asher Weiss, the Minchas Asher on the Yikra, and also my Sefer that I just recently published on the Yikra. So I never met him before. I gave him the Sfarim. We're talking, and then I recognize his name. Turns out, he couldn't believe it. I got so excited, I hugged him outside on our street. He said, "What's going on?" He was like, "Look at me, who's this weird guy? We never met before." We had texted previously about getting the previous Sfarim. Turns out that Hanukkah time, I think it was Hanukkah time, was the first time he heard about what I was doing, and he had texted me. He hadn't texted me. He got Sfarim, because he was in Gaza. I couldn't go to Gaza to give him the Sfarim, but we gave the Sfarim to so-and-so, who on a convoy, just like they brought in food to Gaza, they brought in Sfarim, they brought lots of things to Gaza, they're still doing it. Anyway, but this guy, I was at my office at home. I mentioned, for those of you who were in Shul Shabbos morning, I mentioned the story in Shul Shabbos, in my drasha. I was sitting there, it was a Thursday night, it was 11:30 at night, I was preparing my drushas or whatever I was doing. All of a sudden I get a text, it's pitch black, and just with like a little light, I see a soldier learning Minchas Asher. He sends me a thank you note. So I write back to him, Ifwata. Something about the picture. It wasn't a typical picture. And he writes to me back in Hebrew, Belev Khan Yunis. It was in the heart of Khan Yunis. That was when they just went into central Gaza. The first major battle of the war was, wow, they're in Khan Yunis. That was the Rafa before Rafa. He says, I'm in the heart of Khan Yunis. And then, before I can even ask him for a follow-up, about a minute later, he sends me a minute and a half video, which I still have on my phone. And you can hear the booms in the background. You can hear the booms. And he talks about how he wants to thank me and Salash, but most importantly, Rav Asher Weiss, who he's learning his Torah, and how we're in this place, Shchor HaShchorim, the darkest of the dark. It's not only because there's no electricity, Israel obviously cut the electricity, the bombing and everything, but also because from Khan Yunis came so much darkness to the world, evil Hamas and terrorism, and we are bringing the ore by liberating it and killing the terrorists, etc. But he says that the greatest ore is the ore of Torah, and the sweetest and brightest ore is the ore of Rav Asher Weiss's Torah. And I want you to know I'm here in Yeshivat Khan Yunis, learning. Then he corrected himself. He says, it's not really just me and my friends. He says, throughout communists, there's soldiers everywhere learning in between missions. Bein ha-mesimot, we're learning. So therefore, he says, I have to correct myself. I am one of the people who is in echad me-snifei yeshivat communists. I'm in one of the branches of yeshivat communists. Then he adds, he says, ha-makom od lo muftach. It's not yet safe enough for us to invite Rav Asher Weiss to communists to learn with us. But we hope, in Mirtz Hashem, that soon we'll be able to be free and safe, and we can go to Rav Asher Weiss and see him in person in Yerushalayim. Thank you so much. I had this video. I've written about it. I've talked about it in America. I've given speeches. It's one of my favorite stories. I quoted. That guy was in my driveway on Sunday. I couldn't believe it. I said, "You're the guy." I said, "You have no idea." I said, "When you go up to Shemayim, I hope in 80 years from now, you will have all these extra schusim you didn't know about, because that video, you didn't just inspire me." I brought that to Rav Asher Weiss. He was crying when I showed him the video. He was so taken with emotion. I said, I've used your story in various speeches and shiurim over the last few months to inspire other people. It's all in your zchus. He was blown away. He was speechless. Literally, it was Sunday night, literally 24 hours earlier on Shabbos.
Wow.
I told that story.
Can you share it in the video?
Yeah, I think I'd like to see if I can find it on my phone.
Oh.
Anyway, so that's all this. So again, I'm not saying